Welcome to the Great Commission Today podcast, a podcast designed to help you and your church become more faithful, confident, and purposeful in obedience to the Great Commission. The Great Commission Today is sponsored by Five More Talents, an agency that offers holistic digital outreach solutions to help churches leverage technology wisely to invite more visitors, engage more members, and develop more leaders in this digital age.
Well, Robert Knuth, great to be with you today. Welcome to the Great Commission Today podcast.
Really excited to be here. Thanks, Daniel.
Yeah, and just as we get started, just by way of introduction, you are the campus minister with Reformed University Fellowship at the University of Michigan. Go Blue, I guess that's what they say, right?
Perfect timing for the NCAA tournament.
And really glad that we can have this conversation today. And I guess as we get started, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and RUF and RUF at the University of Michigan and your role there. Yeah.
Yeah. No, thanks for the opportunity. I'll start with RUF and just kind of work toward how we got here. RUF stands for Reformed University Fellowship. We are the denominational campus ministry of the Presbyterian Church in America. And so with that, we are on over 200 campuses across the world, not just here in America, but RUF International, RUF Global. And it's really exciting to think about what God is doing through RUF. This includes my own story. I went to our alma mater, Daniel, Washington Lee University, where as a fraternity guy, the Lord met me through the ministry of RUF. I went because I thought the girls were cute to this gathering on Tuesday night, and the word was preached, and the Lord gave me a new heart.
Wow.
My life soon flipped upside down. I did the RUF internship at the University of Georgia, where I met my wife. She was working with RUF in Manhattan for Michael Keller and City Campus up there. And so we got married that summer. I attended Reformed Theological Seminary in Charlotte, where we kind of knew we wanted to work with RUF after seminary, but RUF was not in Michigan, where my wife was from. And so we were trying to figure out how to make that happen. And in May of 2019, the Great Lakes Presbytery extended a call to me to start RUF on campus here at the University of Michigan in conjunction with our partner churches, which I can speak to a little later on what that looks like for RUF to be in relationship with the local churches can be unique because we're not a parachurch ministry, but we are overseen at the regional level through something called a presbytery. And so I said I'm married to my wife, Catherine. We also have three children. My son, Peter, is 7 and a half. My daughter, Abigail, is 6. And my son, Thomas, just turned 3 a couple months ago.
That's great. And this kind of just to pique our appetite for the rest of the conversation was maybe one story or one example of I guess did you say it was started in 2019 is when you got there?
Fall of 2019, which depending on how you look at it, is either perfect timing or the worst.
Right before the COVID time. So just as you look back at I guess it's been about what 7 years since then, is there something that stands out of where you a way you've seen God at work in establishing RUF at the University of Michigan, the first RUF in Michigan? I mean, that's being from Michigan myself, that's very exciting for me to that God did this. So, but where do you see God's hand at work in just establishing this ministry at the University of Michigan? Just what's an example or a story?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. I've been particularly reflective upon this the past couple of days, and just reading through First 1 Corinthians 4, saying, what God requires of stewards is that they be found faithful. And I think about my role as a steward of the mysteries of God, as a pastor, and so much of the day in and day out grind. I think of Mark 4 and the parable of the sower. Sower goes out to sow, just scatters seeds upon the ground, and you're looking around over the years. And campus ministry is unique in the sense that it's a 4-year cycle, and so much of what we're doing feels fast paced on the day to day. Students are here for a semester or two, and then there's a 4-month break over the summer, and so everything feels urgent on some level. But really, our ministry on campus is the picture that you find in Mark 4 of sowing seed and noticing that as the Spirit of God works in the hearts and lives of students, some hearts are rockier than others. Some, hearts respond really quickly to the message of grace and the work of Christ in the Gospels. And if I could share just, I think a story that has been really cool over time is, people ask me all the time. They say, "Hey, how's REF going?" And my response to them is, "I don't know. Ask me in 30 years," right? Because I think it's really tempting in today's day and age to look at. We have a Wednesday night large group that's supposed to act as a little bit of a bridge between campus and the local church. And depending on what turnout looks like that week, right, I'm either prone to despair or I'm prone to pride, right? Ego inflation, ego deflation, I'm just met with how that's so much the antithesis of what I believe about the gospel, that I'm justified by my faith alone and what Christ has done on my behalf on the cross. And so, if our goal or our effort was just to get as many people, to a gathering on Wednesday nights, that is going to be, I think, on some level short-sighted.
The next thing I wanted to ask you about, which is, I think we were talking about before I pressed the record button, is how RUF is intentional about connection with the local church. And so you were talking about, Mark 4, the parable of the sower, and about how, preaching the word is a foundational to your ministry there as an RUF campus minister, but there's also those connections to the local church. So, maybe I think it'd be helpful for me and probably for our listeners just to kind of talk about how the RUF at the University of Michigan is connected to the local churches and the presbytery, and specifically how that relates to how you minister to the students. And I'm just thinking about how, we know certainly from the, I guess I have to think, go back to the Westminster Confession and catechisms about the ordinary means of grace, right? How God uses not only the word, but also prayer and the sacraments of the Lord's Supper and baptism. So, how have you, I mean, you alluded to that in the story you told of the two students who ended up married. And so how have you seen the Lord using those means of grace and also in connection with the local church? And
That's a great question. So for those who aren't aware, I know we talked about this beforehand. RUF is a ministry of something called a presbytery. And so in that sense, I'm ordained as a teaching elder in the PCA, but I am not on staff at a one particular local church. And sometimes this, I think, is met with confusion and maybe frustration because it might seem like there's actually a disconnection from the local church. When I think as an RUF campus minister, it's not so much that as it is an onus to actually go out of our way to connect not just with one local church, but multiple local churches. Because again, we're thinking long term, we're thinking big picture, not just throughout, a student's life here in Ann Arbor, which I think is really helpful because a lot of our students move to Detroit, they move to Traverse City, they move to Grand Rapids, and to have a pre-existing connection with PCA churches there, I think builds up our entire denomination. In 2024, the PCA was one of two Protestant denominations that actually grew. And I like to think a lot of that growth is attributed to RUF across the country as we have these more regional and even national connections, not just specific local ones. And so if I start big picture and kind of zero in a little picture, right, what does it actually look like for us to not be doing just our own thing on campus, but actually be doing it in conjunction with the local church? I think it has to start with viewing the context of the college campus, right? Like if you break down the average bedtime, the average income, maybe even like the average political affiliation, we could go down the list of, everything that's different about the college campus to, your ordinary local PCA church. There is a chasm of cultural difference that the local church has to know how to navigate on some level, if they were to ever reach campus and ever minister to college students. And I think sometimes that chasm can be so overwhelming that either we don't do anything, right, to accommodate or to meet college students where they are, or we throw the baby out with the bathwater and we become, one of these churches that doesn't even really know who we are. We just know that we want to reach college students, and so I see RUF as a little bit of a bridge between this world of college and the local church. Within RUF circles, we talk about being the food truck of the local church, right? Or the arm of the church, right? Like if you think of a food truck, the food truck doesn't have the full menu of the restaurant. We're not baptizing anybody, we're not administering Lord's Supper, there's no membership, there's no, official discipline. I'm not working with a session. But I am seminary trained, I've been ordained. The church has sent me to campus to represent them, to represent the Great Lakes Presbytery and more broadly speaking, the PCA. And so it's really beautiful when I'm able to sit across the table from a student or stand up on Wednesday night and say, God loves you so much. The church loves you so much. RUF is here, right? And I think for a lot of students who are skeptical of authority and might even have, a baggage of church, history, bad experiences, that's a really redemptive measure that God's able to use. And so, in that sense, RUF is as incarnational as the parachurch, but still ecclesially bound, as any other, pastor who sits on a session of a local church, which kind of gets into the day-to-day, week-to-week operations. Some of this depends on the local church and where they are. When I started here, we only had one PCA church. Now we have two. One was a church plant, one was more established. And so working with the church plant that my family and I attend, the opportunity was to enmesh so much of the systems and structures of that local church with what we were already doing on campus, whether that be mercy ministry, evangelistic measures, even something that might seem as superficial as the music, right? Is the music that we're playing on Wednesday night the same music that, we're playing on Sunday morning, so that when students walk into RUF, on some level, what they don't even realize is they're being prepared for life at our local church and more broadly speaking in the PCA. There's a Barna poll in 1972 when polling Christians and their denomination affiliation, 5% of American Christians identified as non-denominational. In 2026, I think this poll actually was 2024. In 2024, that number was well over 26%. So over one out of every four American Christians who are coming to Michigan, college campuses across the country are coming as, more broadly speaking, evangelical, non-denom folks. They have in general, a lower ecclesiology. This isn't true about every church. I don't mean to make this a reductionistic statement, but in general, they have a lower ecclesiology. They have a lower view of the sacraments. They have a lower view of what we would call the ordinary means of grace. Even something as the preached word being the very word of God. So a lot of what my work is on campus is to not just reach non-Christian students. Right now, last week I had a conversation with a Muslim and a Mormon, like within the same week. We're reaching a wide swath of non-Christian students, right? That is obviously a part of the job. But even, as students come in and they're Christians and they want to grow, they want to be equipped, they want to be trained. So much of that is having to actually give them categories for the Christian life long term that is going to move them in the direction where they would actually crave and thirst for a confessional Reformed church that is regularly, administering the sacrament of baptism and actually believes something is being done in the sacrament of baptism, and the Lord's Supper, and that they would want to submit themselves to a session and be shepherded, and they would be exposed to good expository preaching, right? And so, I think sometimes there might be a frustration because it's like, why aren't more college students coming to our PCA churches? And if I can give a short answer, it's because they're just not ready for, not in the sense that like PCA churches are the top of the mountain and they just need to get their stuff together, but because the world of the PCA is so different than the world they're coming from, even if they're Christians. So they need someone who's trained, who's been to seminary, who loves the PCA, who loves, our Reformed tradition to say, this is why we do what we do. And to walk with them over the long haul, to be patient with them. I mean, we kind of have a joke within our staff team that for the first 3 years of a college student's life, they're going to go to all the big non-denom churches. But without a doubt, their senior year, by the time they graduate, they're actually making the transition because they've been exposed to Reform expository preaching every Wednesday night. All of a sudden, they realize they want something a little bit more substantive, and that's where we actually end up seeing. I think the statistics I ran on our three graduating classes is 65% of our grads are attending confessional Reformed churches, which we're really proud of. Obviously, we want the students to love the Big C Church more broadly, but just because we are RUF, right? Those stats being what they are, we think that's a fruit of the type of ministry that we're doing on campus.
Hey there, I'm Daniel Voss, co-founder and CEO of Five More Talents, and I wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening to the Great Commission Today podcast. I pray that each and every episode, including today's, blesses you and equips you and helps you to feel more confident, more purposeful, and to be more faithful in making disciples of all nations wherever the Lord has placed you. I also wanted to offer a special invitation to you if you're a church leader. If you're a church leader and you have the opportunity to use online outreach at your church and you're a decision maker in that role, and you sense that your church is just not grasping all the opportunities that you could to make more disciples and invite more visitors using the online media, then I'd love to talk with you. You can book a free 30-minute meeting with me called an outreach discovery call. In that meeting, we'll talk about what you've been doing and begin to explore some of the additional possibilities that are out there for you. So that sounds like that would be helpful to you. Just go to go.fivemoretalents.com and fill out the form there. Now back to the interview.
Just to, I guess, kind of see the beauty of it as well. Like, why, how does this work in your ministry to the students as you talk about how the Christian life is, and I'm not going to word this very well, but it's about loving Jesus. Because he first loved us, and because he first loved us and we love him, we also love his church. How do you, I guess, why, what's your perspective on, especially as you minister with college students today, what kind of things have you done and do you do and are you thinking about as far as helping students to understand that, that, you know, Jesus loves his church and the church is a great, I'm not even sure how to word this, but I think you're kind of, it's right. It's because that's, yeah.
I think I'm picking up a little bit of what you might be saying. It's interesting, you know, if you were to ask the average freshman why they go to church, where they go to church, they will say one of two things. They will say either the music feels really alive, or they'll actually say it differently. They'll say the spirit is really alive, which is, you know, an interesting theology of the Holy Spirit. But so, and then the other answer they'll give is, I really can connect with the pastor. Right. The pastor really, you know, either the way he tells stories or the way whatever. Right. I don't want to assume what it is. But it's interesting because I hear that. And oftentimes the response I have is, well, why go to church then? Why, you know, you could probably just listen to a podcast. You know, church can be your Spotify playlist of worship music, you know, and then listen to a podcast and you're good to go. And obviously I don't mean that. That's not a serious, I'm just trying to expose to them their view of the local church and something that I think is totally enmeshed within our culture, right? Which is the hyper individualism and consumerism that comes with living in America in the 21st century and how that's bled into how we view church participation and even our roles at the local church. You know, I walk in on Sunday morning, I'm here to, you know, to consume a worship experience, to consume theology or whatever the pastor wants to give me. And then I leave. And so a lot of how we're trying to showcase the beauty of King Jesus and this kingdom that he's ushered in and the church being kind of the hub of all of that type of kingdom activity is to expand what it looks like to actually participate in the local church as someone who serves and isn't there to necessarily be served, training them to love, you know, because the average local church is going to be a faithful pastor who, you know, has kids at home, a wife he's trying to love, you know, people he's trying to meet with and shepherd throughout the week. So, you know, when it comes to Sunday morning, he might put forward a really average, faithful sermon, but it's not gonna be flashy or you know, might not even give as much application as like a college student wants per se. But giving them a vision for, hey, what's it actually look like to love that church? Not because it's the flashiest or not because it's the biggest or not because it has the best music, but because it's really faithful. And then connecting it with like marriage. It's like, well, you know, are you, once you're married, constantly going to be looking for like the more attractive, you know, member of the opposite sex, you know? And it's like, well, no, because you're committed to this woman and, or this man. And what's it look like to love them ordinarily, faithfully over time? It's no different than how you end up loving the church. And I just don't think college students are thinking in those categories right now. Like I just got out of a conversation actually an hour ago and this young woman, I was encouraging her that God was at work through the ordinary faithfulness of her showing up and her plodding along. You know, it's the dead of winter in Michigan. It's dark and it's really easy to be like, is God even here? There's nothing flashy going on. There's nothing, you know. And even I recounted to her Charles Spurgeon's conversion. You know, he walks into a church of eight people and the pastor wasn't even there. And like God was doing something magnificent. And so trying to get students to love the ordinary and to believe that God is a God. He's an extraordinary God who is at work in the ordinary.
Yeah. And so that is wonderful. I just love how you've been talking about stewardship and got, you know, faithfulness. And it kind of brings brings us to the topic of leadership. And I think RUF, in my mind, it does have a kind of a focus on leadership development and say a heart for leadership development. I know lots of RUF campus ministers go on to become church planters or you know, ministers in local churches. And so there's, so how have you seen just that, or the Lord at work, raising up leaders, developing leaders, in this process of, maybe bringing in leaders from the local churches to encourage, to help, you know, how have the, you know, be they elders and deacons or just be they, you know, ordinary Christians, quote unquote, using their gifts, being faithful stewards of their gifts. Part of making disciples is like a guy was telling me yesterday in a conversation, right? You know, there's all of us should have a Paul and a Timothy, someone that's mentoring us and then someone whom we're mentoring. So I'm just curious kind of what that's looked like and how you think about that and how you've seen the, maybe the Lord use, leaders and leadership development. And
yeah, no, I think this is a good question. Cause I think in my, youth, I mean, I'm still only 34, but when I was first ordained, I was 27. I think I came with a lot of zeal to campus and honestly believed that, you know, students, they just really needed me. They just really, like, they needed my gifts and I had the goods, right? And how foolish and prideful I was in that. And I think as I've grown, you know, and this kind of goes back to your church question, Daniel, is I think the students who are going to really experience the fullness of RUF is kind of what we say. They're going to get the most out of their RUF experience are the students who have categories, have been given exposure to what ordinary church members are doing to love them, to minister to them. We took a mission trip to Mexico City 2 years ago, and we had an elder of our local church come along with us. He's from Mexico City, and you know, the whole time he's telling funny stories, and that wasn't his job. He had a normal job, but you know, for students to experience that he loved them, the church loved them enough to come along with, I think it was so much more meaningful and so much more impactful than, you know, oh, that's just Robert. That's his job. You know, he has to do this. He has to tell me this. And that's only been so much more, I think, fully put on display. We have an adoptive student program, you know, at the church my wife and I attend, that has been super cool for students to get into the homes of ordinary Christians, because most of them aren't going to go into ministry, right? Most of them are going to be lawyers or teachers or whatever it is God calls them to. And for them to actually get a real category of, you know, someone who is doing what they want to do one day, but also living on mission, living, you know, in submission to the authority of the local church and God's word that the church stands upon, I think is the thing, probably more than anything, that they will take with them, right? They're not going to remember my sermons as much. They're not going to remember, you know, the meetings they had with me pastorally as much. They're going to remember collectively ways in which they were loved by ordinary faithful Christians. And so I'm sure there's more I could say. I don't know if I'm answering your question as much. I mean, here's a statistic for you. Like I said, we have three graduating classes. And you have to remember, we started from the ground up. So like my first couple graduating classes, we didn't have many students graduate. And obviously, as we go along, we continue to build. RUF here is got the second largest staff team in the country. It's one of the larger ministries outside the Southeast. And so I look forward to this only more so being the case. But in 2024, our second graduating class in this fall, so fall of 2026, we're going to have three of our graduates be at one of our Reformed seminaries. There's going to be two at RTS. There's going to be one at Covenant. And that's not even including my friend who I just told you about, who's the videographer there. So God is using this ministry to continue to create a pipeline of Reformed pastors and leaders, not just for the PCA, but hopefully other confessional Reformed denominations. And in a time where we are experiencing a shortage of pastoral candidates, I think a ministry like RUF is more vital than ever.
That's great. Couple questions as we wrap up, last questions. One is, how are you seeing students on campus today use, you know, digital media as part of their, you know, communication? Is that something that you see as becoming more important, or are you seeing that that's maybe kind of becoming less important as books like The Anxious Generation have been published, talking about some of the negative associations with social media and so forth? So I'm curious about kind of what you're seeing on the college campus these days, as far as, are people like, yeah, it's so cool to communicate, you know, online, versus like, man, this is really like, whose idea was this social media stuff? Like, yeah, I'm just kind of curious what you're seeing and how that fits into your ministry these days.
Yeah, as you can imagine, it's, you know, people have strong opinions on it, both directions. You know, we have students who aren't on social media at all. And so even just getting announcements out to them is, you know, we have to have other avenues to do that. But I would say by and large, most students are definitely on Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok. My generation, maybe your generation, you know, we're more in the Facebook mold or whatever. You won't see students on Facebook. And so we've had to make a conscious decision as a ministry. And this COVID did a lot to change this as well. So much of how we get initial freshman contacts who are coming in, they're Christian believers, they're looking for a group. So much of that work actually takes place in the months of May, June, and July, because we'll have, you know, there'll be Instagram pages of, you know, I think the most recent one is the Michigan class of 2030. They're incoming freshmen. And we go through the whole page, and if they have anything Christian in their bio, we give them a follow. You know, half the time they'll follow us back. We have a whole system of what it looks like in July to direct message them, introduce kind of what we're doing. Students will do this. They'll invite them into, you know, group chats and opportunities to be known within RUF. Because back in my day, you know, you walked up to a table and there was a group, and that's kind of how you found people, right? Things are starting a lot earlier now because of the digital platforming and social media. And I think that has pros and cons to it. Students won't even, you know, talking to a student last week about why they landed in RUF. And one of the reasons they said, and maybe some of our listeners are going to scoff at this, they said because the Instagram looked really cool. And I shudder at stuff like that, 'cause I'm not on Instagram. And I told you before we started, I'm like the least tech savvy millennial there is. So that stresses me out. You know, I'm like, I didn't go to seminary to learn how to do Instagram. But I also think that's just speaking to where Gen Z is, and how they're approaching church, right? Like, we talk with our leadership team that our Instagram in a lot of ways is like the front door into our ministry. And so, you know, a smiling face on Instagram, you know, is worth so much. And so, yeah, I mean, the broader, I think, theological conversation of like how to use that in a way that's actually reflective of a ministry like ours that values, you know, the local church and the ordinary means of grace and doesn't want to just, you know, put things out there to put things out there. That's a whole nother conversation that I'm sure we could have. But I think the encouragement I have to our listeners is, you know, if your church doesn't have an Instagram, to get one. And if your church has one, find a motivated, you know, 17-year-old who sees the importance of that and values the importance of that, and give them the bandwidth or the freedom to kind of make that into something that is going to be valuable in reaching their peers. I think that, you know, speaking as a PCA pastor, we denominationally, I think we have a long way to grow. Sorry, getting tongue tied. We have a long way to go in kind of, I think, seeing the importance of that. And you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that so many American Christians are coming out of non-denom context, those churches tend to, I think, see the importance of it. And I don't know, you know, maybe it's a new challenge for 2026. What are we going to do? How do we steward those platforms?
That's great. Last question. You mentioned evangelism. Anything else you wanted to say about, as we wrap up, about the work of evangelism and how that fits into what you're doing, what the Lord is doing there at the University of Michigan?
Yeah, I know I want to honor your time, and I've talked here longer than anticipated, but I will say, you know, evangelism, I've seen it done really poorly on campus. We have a lot of outside groups come in and they want to reach, you know, secular progressive Michigan with the gospel, and I love their zeal. I would just encourage listeners that as much as we have zeal to participate in the mission of God, we also need to have a humility to trust that God is at work. He is not forsaken places or people. And so anytime we go into an area, it could be your local city, your local neighborhood, right? I think taking a pulse on what God is already doing through, you know, churches and ministries there, ways that he's reaching people and, you know, ways that the church even has opportunity to grow, to reach people, I think is the first place you need to start, right? With any sort of evangelistic measures or means. In RUF, we don't have a fixed evangelistic program. We are a relational ministry. And so whether it be, I know Campus Crusade calls it contact work, people, you know, meeting people out that you would never meet in a million years. Even when we're in the middle of the diag doing that, the middle of campus, all of it is relational, right? We are not just kind of handing out tracks to hand out tracks. We are asking ordinary, honest questions about everyday life. And some people want to stop and chit chat, and that's great, right? Like that's John 3, like evidence of the wind blowing, the spirit blowing where he will. And we have to go where that is and not try to manufacture, you know, spiritual activity just because we are anxious and feel like we need to be doing something. And so I think it takes a lot of praying and asking the Lord where he is already working, and then going to those places to reap the harvest that he has for us. I think sometimes we're so stubborn, you know, we want God to be working here, and so we're just going to stay here, and then we get frustrated that he's not working here. And so I don't know, there's more I could say, but that's a little bit of where we're at.
All right. Well, Robert, thank you so much for your time today. It's been wonderful just to hear a little bit. There is a whole lot more we could discuss, but this is what you've given us a lot to chew on. So thank you so much, brother.
Thanks, Daniel. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Great Commission Today podcast. If this has been helpful to you, please subscribe, share with your friends, and leave a review.
He is given to me. Jesus came and said, just before he went to heaven, he commanded them, go therefore and make disciples, teaching them to do what I've told you. He said, go therefore and make disciples, and when it's all complete, I'll come for you.